And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And do we have to talk about the Eagles game?
We do. I think we should start with an apology that, amateur podcasting, it's exhausting. The bruises after every podcast, the sort of the research, the hard training, the hours I spend getting our elite sound quality just right. It takes its toll. So we did have a week off, and
we had a bye just as the players did.
Indeed. Hats off to some of the other Richmond podcasts who have been. I think there's been four Richmond podcasts since we last did one. So hats off to all of them for their dedication. But we're actually the oldest. So as sort of the veterans, our bodies take longer to get up. Apologies, but we're back now. And yeah, look, you made a very apt observation to me that losing in a bye week just sucks because especially a close one, because you've just got longer to talk about. We did.
And I really didn't want to talk about this game very much because it just encapsulated, that I hate it. When we lose a game because of goal kicking, and we kind of lost the game because of goal kicking.
Yeah, actually, that was one of my first thoughts after the game, after I finished kicking my metaphoric, I don't actually have a cat, but after I finished kicking the cat about the fact that Kennedy's eight-meter goal mark got paid. That was when I started to come down. One of my first thoughts was, this is your worst nightmares come true. And yeah, on the what I consider more accurate expected shot metric, the score was 73-92, Richmond win. So it's exactly your worst nightmare. Now you can actually sort of, if the other metrics were closer, it was pretty much a 50-50 game. And if I was being ultra pragmatic, I'd say, well, the GWS game was probably a 50-50 game, and now we're sort of one-on-one in them.
But you take the Port Adelaide game as well. Look, any time the margin's under a goal, it's just a bounce of the ball one way or the other. And I think, it's been a really difficult season for a whole host of reasons, like playing in Perth back-to-back and travelling to and from Perth both times. That's that's one of the longest road trips in Perth, and obviously the Western Australian teams do it regularly, but there's a reason they don't do it back to back.
To be clear, we only did it because we were made to feel not very welcome in Western Australia. So
Western Australia certainly government, got not just the umpires. I definitely agree with that assessment. And, whereas Dreamtime at the Oval, which is a fantastic ground, was a great event, when you're back in front of a nearly full house, although, it was a big contingent of Tigers there again, so hats off to them. But otherwise, is it the most sour and entitled group of fans in the AFL? I had trouble working it out.
Well, I'm sure many people would say it's us. I watched the game in a pub, and a perfectly pleasant West Coast supporter next to me after CCJ kicked his goal, and I got super excited with the fist pumping. He said, after three premierships, isn't that enough? Aren't you getting a bit over the top excited? And I did have to say to him, and it was the only nasty words we had, but, you're hardly the lovable underdogs, the West Coast Eagles. Like, one on two of the entitled fan bases, we're certainly, us 1-2, and there's daylight second.
And as we discussed a few weeks ago about free kick differentials, that the Eagles haven't had a negative free kick differential this century, and so just having a game where I think they measured it, and the Liam Ryan pass was 12 meters, So yeah, but it just happens.
Yeah.
And it's annoying, and we look at our season a bit differently. You know, if so, we've 1-2 in these super tight games. You take your lumps and move on. But oh yeah, it did somewhat spoil the bye weekend.
It did. Look, and I'm still impressed that we can bring up such sourness after all our success. It's like the good old days. Now, Nick, I do want to move on, but just quickly, a few things that I wanted to talk about. Blossy's turnover in the last few minutes was absolutely horrendous, which was a great shame, because I've asked you this before, but you didn't respond. I think it was Blossy's best game for the season, but also I can't think of a worse moment in his career. You could argue the grand final turnover in the first quarter. So it's either that or think about how many high pressure kicks Flossie's had to make. That kick he missed in the last quarter, he's probably made 1,000 of those where he perfectly weights them. It's one of his great strengths. He always perfectly weights the kick, hits. He's so reliable on those sort of 30 to 40 meter chips out of the back line. And yeah, it was just unfortunate that one of the very few he missed was, and he missed it by a lot, was a key moment in the game. But other than that, it was actually a promising game in that it was his best, was a bit of a return to form.
I thought, I was, other than the complete brain heller. Look, the one in the grand final was worse, because when it happened, I was convinced that we were going to lose 150-0.
Yeah, it actually happened right in front of me, sort of. I was in the second deck, but yeah, I remember it so clearly to this day. And not the TV replays, but how it looked on the day. It's one of my clearest memories, actually. Yes. So, okay, fair enough. I am suffering recency bias, but it was quite the moment. We should mention he had 11 intercept marks and was the top-rated champion data player for us.
Had a huge game. Speaking of returning to form, it was just great to have Kane Lambert back in the team again.
Yeah, so of the very few points, I completely agree. And I think one of the reasons we lost was actually he had 20 touches in the first half. Now, I'm sure they tightened up on him, but I think one of the reasons we lost was that Kane's coming back from injury and couldn't sustain that amazing first half, and he did fade a bit in the second half. But yeah, the 20 touches in the first half, the two goals, it was a fantastic performance.
So you mentioned about Callum Coleman-Jones, and thanks as always. You know, between AFL Tables and Footy Wire, this podcast has been possible for the past decade, but I did a comparison of CCJ and Lynch's stats for the season so far, and look, CCJ's probably being helped by a little bit of unsustainable goal kicking, and he's not quite at the same level as Tom Lynch in terms of shots at goal, marks inside 50. But he's going really well.
He is, and actually, I was reflecting on the sort of the ups and downs of football that a few weeks ago before he debuted, I was really nervous. Whether his game was sustainable in
debuted as a key forward.
He did have the Essendon game. I apologise. But based on his not particularly impressive game against Collingwood in the preseason, admittedly sort of with a bit of hindsight, was against Darcy Moore, pretty handy player. But I was really worried about it, and I've gone from being worried about it I actually thought it was crucial that he was either off the ground or stuck at full forward in key moments when we needed a kick, a release kick down the line. And Jack was doing it and consistently was getting beaten 2-on-1, which is fair enough. He's 32. And Barris was getting over the top. And I thought that actually CCG not being in the play and not being sort of that long target was one of the reasons we should sack him. No, only kidding. But I actually thought he went from, oh, I don't know, I'm really nervous about this, to he's really crucial in the flow of the game. So and that's all credit to him, because he was clunking the big contested marks on the wing as well as kicking goals. So come a long way and looking exciting.
Yeah, and that was... So his contested mark stats were just dominant in the VFL. But you never know how VFL form translates, as we know, for better and ill. But he's top five in the AFL for contested marks per game since coming into the team. And yeah, I just think, I don't know, it's going to be really... I look at him and I think, where is Bolton? Because, you know, the teams are, you know, teams are certainly coming after him, but it just feels like we'll pay what it takes to keep him. Whereas I think CCJ is potentially so valuable to a club like the Suns, who've been looking at him for a while, who don't have an alternative at the position. Yeah, God, why not? He's going to get paid.
Yeah, you're going to look at that tape and say, "Oh, please keep me." And you know, Lynch is coming back, and CCJ might get dropped. And after playing games like that, like he would rightfully be saying, "Well, I should be at a club where I'm playing." It's both very impressive but worrisome. Like, hopefully, I'd much rather keep him. But yeah, as you say, it may be beyond our ability. But we shall see. So I did want to... We talked about him so much. We talked about it being a big opportunity for Chole. And at the end of it, I thought, well...
Although it didn't turn out quite as bad. When Nick Knapp got that goal in the first quarter, I was like, oh my God, he's going to destroy us. And he sort of did, but it wasn't quite that bad.
Yeah, and that is a bit... That's a bit Nick Knapp too. That he's the upside highlight makes it look like, you know, he makes... I remember watching him in Grundy last year, and he did the same thing at the like just the most amazing highlights. But he doesn't do eight of them. He'll do two of them. But yeah, I sort of we suspended disbelief, you know, as fans. You know, there's so much to like about Chole, and the highlights are amazing too. But the sort of, I think some context should be remembered. He's our third string ruck for a reason. And
if we didn't need CCJ as our backup key forward, would he be our fourth string ruck?
I don't... In the VFL, they tend to, and maybe that's a product of the transitory need hierarchy that they want to do in the seniors. But he does start in the ruck for the VFL when both him and CCJ and Sampson are playing. So look, I don't know.
CCJ averages more hitouts. I know. You're right. Chole does start as first ruck, but CCJ averages more hitouts.
Yeah, and so look. All you're arguing basically, he's not even our third string ruck. He's our fourth string ruck. Yes, it showed. The fan upside, you know, we wanted to be optimistic. We said it was a big test, and you know, I think we got the answer that we already knew, but it was, it was what it was.
It was disappointing. Are we worried about Trent Cotchin?
Yes. I actually wasn't going to bring it up because I'm always, you know, I don't like saying it, and it's a bit sensitive. I didn't want to be a downer, but 12 touches, big game. Yeah, it's when you're that age, if you're 25, you just ignore it and say it's a one-off. But it's a worry.
Yeah, and look, he has played some good footy this year, and he's had... he hasn't had continuity in his footy. Yeah, he's the captain. He needs to play better than that.
Yeah. All right. I think I've got nothing more to say about the game. Well, actually, I thought we were going to do this in 5 minutes, and we've managed to spend 10 minutes on it. So I'm sure our listeners are thrilled to be reminded of all those exciting moments again.
Do you know what I did enjoy?
Yeah. Please do tell.
I enjoyed the.
I love the game, by the way. I love the game to the last 2 minutes. It was a cracking game.
Yeah.
Lots of fun.
Oh, if we'd won, we would have recorded. Yeah, within a day or two.
And I felt like a final beforehand.
Yeah, it was a big occasion. Just, yeah, you gotta nail the ending.
Yeah. Well, football's only fun because there's a fear of losing.
Yeah, so much fear. I did enjoy the AFLW trade period. Partly I enjoyed it because it's relatively brief compared to the men. So,
yes.
You know, and just like the men, you know, 3/4 of the trades get done on the last day because that's how negotiations work.
In some ways, Nick, sorry to interrupt, Nick, but I agree, and not having the endless media speculation is definitely better. And actually, it feels a bit like if you've ever played a computer management game where feelings aren't involved, like a FIFA or a Madden, it feels a bit like that because you don't get sort of the lead up to knowing that players want to move. They just sort of, suddenly there's like a super complex trade or a 4-team trade. It just happens. And it's almost like they're, it's not like real life that people are moving, you know, in many cases states, and there's sort of this big change that just sort of seem to happen magically, and then it's in the paper. So it's sort of, it's a bit like computer game trading, but of course they're very real people and these are their jobs.
Yeah, I think Sabs leaving was the, which we've talked about before, was a complete non-shock to the industry. We traded pick 38 for a young 48 for a young ruckman, which is tantalisingly close to the Toby Nankervis trade. But this was for Poppy King from St Kilda, who's a big athletic ruckman. And we somewhat sadly delisted Alice Edmonds, who, you know, I had great hopes for coming into our first season, but yeah, really struggled to get a game this season. But yeah, I don't know. Do you think she replaces Gabby Seymour, or it's a compliment?
I think it's a compliment. I thought Gabby was quite good, and it's as Sarah Black has pointed out on this pod before. That seems to be quite a legitimate way to play in the AFLW. But I guess the one that was sort of interesting and not unexpected was the Monaghan delisting.
Yeah, I was surprised by that.
So I praised her a lot. Well, not a lot, but a little bit in our first year because her stats held up. She was getting quite a lot of the ball, and she was gamey last year. That first season, the back line was often the weakest link and was absolutely collapsing, and she was sort of the one who was most noticeably fighting against the tide. But I really noticed that I thought this year she was really exposed on a slightly better team. You know, she was sort of the release kick, and she's not a very good kick. So I have to say I wasn't, she was brave in our first year, and, you know, on the scale of sort of people have, to me, I remember fondly, she's definitely higher on it than some of our other delistings. This year, I thought she was exposed that her football doesn't work in a better team. But she got picked up again by a better team than us, so there you go. But Brisbane. I could see what happened.
Yeah, it was interesting. Kate Sheen talked about, you know, needing to stock up on young players while they could ahead of another wave of expansion, so maybe an older player like Phoebe doesn't quite get as much benefit of the doubt. Alana Woodward was the other player delisted. We've talked on a previous show, they got Eddie Shevlin from Collingwood to play as sort of a running halfback. But the Josh Caddy trade in terms of, you know, things that pop up on the last day was trading a second round draft pick for Jess Hosking, which, you know, that's a really good bit of business, I reckon.
Yeah, and gives us some more depth in the midfield and double trouble.
She's a good player. She's not a great player, but she's a good player, and she's certainly, you know, it just pads out the middle tier of the team of having experienced, hard, competent professionals. Yeah, and she gets to play with her sister, which is fun as well. And you know, she's been a good player on a good team for some time. So yeah, I thought that was a nice bit of business.
And there is a thing we talked about a bit last week is, you know, AFLW, the turnover's higher. Like, there's no sort of the opportunity cost in the men's and women's is different. That, you know, okay, the opportunity cost is someone who's getting a good young player, but there's no guarantee you'll keep that player will be giving you something in 3 years' time. So why not take the person who's going to help the team next year? You play for now. It's more of a
And with the second round draft pick, you know, you're looking at a player who you hope is as good as Jess Hosking. I think, you know, we've now got because the draft's done on sort of state-based pools. We've got the third and tenth picks out of the Victorian pool. In what's possibly a two-player draft, which is pretty annoying. But I think the draft's at the end of July, so I think we'll see if we can get Sarah Black on again and get her to tell us who we're going to pick again. But yeah, I think sort of, you know, filling out our top tier with the really high picks, but then filling out the team, and you know, we are in an interesting spot in sort of, we ended up last season as the best of the bad teams, but there is a big jump still to being a good team.
Yeah, but I think the summary of the off season is, and I'm paraphrasing something you said to me before, is we kept all our high picks, we filled out got a few sort of mid level players, and didn't lose anyone who was any good for us last year. So seems like a pretty good trade period.
Mm. So the off season speculation for the men is in full swing, including on some of the other Richmond podcasts. But it is. I can see why there's more chatter around Richmond. Like, I think being sceptical towards trade chatter is always the appropriate way to be. You know, keeping in mind we haven't traded for a player since 2017, since we've won our first premiership. So I think that's probably a good default template, you know. But
there is an argument that, like, which Leper has made publicly, and Leper's probably still a little bit informed of the thinking, that perhaps especially now that we may not be quite as good, that there might be a slight change of strategy. Look, who knows? But it's fun, yeah. Isn't it? It's fun to play computer,
play football manager.
Yeah.
But we've certainly got the flexibility to do it. So we've got six picks in the first three rounds of the draft, Do we want that many young players? I suppose is a question, because we still have quite a few guys out of contract, and I'll run through them quickly, and I want you to, react one way or the other of where you think they'll be next year. So, just running through them alphabetically. Bashahuli?
I think we'll give him another contract.
Mm. Yeah, particularly after last week, I think so. Ben Miller?
Gone.
Biggie Nguyen?
One more year.
CCJ?
Gone.
Dan Rioli, noting, but talks are ongoing with his agent. Apparently, they were talking about a 2-year extension last month.
Stay.
Dave Asprey.
Stay.
Derek Eglamozy Smith.
Gone.
Hugo Ralph Smith.
Stay.
Jason Castagna.
Stay, obviously.
Kempton McIntosh?
Oh, God, I hope he stays. And I know the rumours are out there, but, he's so important. He's our best winger.
Marbia Chol?
Gone.
Noah Cumberland?
That's a good one. What do you think? I probably think probably gone.
Yeah, I think maybe delisted and put on the rookie list.
Yeah, okay.
Patrick Naish.
Sadly gone, even though he was really good on the weekend.
I know. Ryan Mansell?
I'll stay.
Yeah, definitely. Ryan Garthwaite?
Well, sort of gone. It's too many keys gone, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Shea Bolton?
I reckon he'll stay.
Yeah, me too. Sydney Stack.
Oh, stay, I think.
Yep. Thompson Dow.
I'll stay.
Will Martin.
Stay.
It is a reasonably long list. I mean, that is the way the AFL works, but yeah, it is a reasonably long list.
Yeah, it's hard, is it, because I think both CCJ and Chola are a 60% chance of leaving, but I think there's a less than 60% chance that they'll both leave. I think the result of one affects the other. They're not independent events, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think one of K-Mac, Bolton and CCJ goes, and yeah, I don't know. I think...
Yeah, that makes sense.
We've already got 6 draft picks. I wouldn't be surprised if we... I think we'll certainly use a fair chunk of them, but, if we've got even more draft picks, and trading for draft picks is far more common than player-for-player trades, but, I think it'll be a busier trade period.
The rumours around in order not of credibility, but just the names I've heard tossed around: Mitchell, Billingsworth, Sarah from Dockers, Narkor, and Mitch Wallace. I'm sure there's been other rumours, but they're just the ones that come to mind. Which of those do you think is the most possible?
I don't know. Mitch Wallace, I just don't understand what's happened with him at the Bulldogs.
I was actually Narkor shocked when
feels
I...
Like a...
Sorry, go.
Oh, no. Narkor feels very much like a... Like a Richmond pick, I was honestly surprised. We may have had a crack at him last year, but I know, maybe that's just because he's mates with Richmond players.
I think Sarah, but...
it'll be interesting.
Because I don't think you'd need to pay that much to get him back. I don't think there'll be...
The question is, how desperate are Carlton and Essendon? Because I think the sort of the reason hesitate a bit on how much you pay for non-core guys, like you have to be confident that he's going to be one of your really core midfielders. Because I think one of the lessons from the Carlton failed rebuild so far is, well, A, develop your midfielders who you've drafted in the first round, but B, they spent a lot of money on players in non-core positions. So if you're confident Chair is going to be a really good on-baller, then pay big money for him. But if he's not, much of an upgrade on Jack Graham, then... Yeah, if Carlton want to offer him $700,000, maybe you let them.
Yeah, I don't think Carlton will go down that path again. I think Essendon are primed for overpaying someone to get over the hump to really get them up to sixth spot. So yeah. Well, interesting. Yeah, it's so hard, isn't it, when you've got a veteran team, and it's so probably dependent on also who goes out. But you know, it's the comeback to again.
It is a good problem to have that we're talking about 22 and 23 year old Richmond players who are going to have a lot of value on the open market.
Yeah, that is true. And look. But the sort of the key point from an opportunity to get the list better, and going back to the Cochin issue before, is that, but you said, you know, you use this line with Jack, but the Cochin's replacement, I don't think, unless you're, you know, a huge RCD or Thompson Dow fan, is not on the list.
You mentioned about the VFL before. It did make me sad that spectators couldn't go to the Williamstown game.
God, that's a beautiful ground. But lucky it was televised. It was another classic between a wonderful VFL rivalry. And they are an impressive team. I must admit, I quite like watching them. And, you know, partly I feel because obviously they're captained by a former Richmond player. Great fun game, fantastic finish.
I tell you, I loved, and I wish I took note of who was, but the 7plus commentator did a great job of explaining why it wasn't a behind at the end of the game, which Michael Hibbert clearly didn't know.
Yeah, in fairness though, he might not have... From the kicker's angle, he wouldn't have been able to see whether or not it went over or anything like that. Yeah. And it's frustrating for him because it was actually like in the last moment of a tight game, that was a cracking kick. But yeah, he should have topped it.
in this, as in so many other things.
Yes. And, you know, I think it's fair to say, Nick, that I won a 1-point game on the weekend, having been down at 2 goals at 3-quarter time. So,
speaking from your experience in tight games, yeah.
Yeah, if anyone knows anyone associated with the Seagulls, you know, feel free to put them in contact with me about how to close out tight games. Individual efforts that stood out to you?
Oh, look, I thought. Samson Ryan's normally. Quite a bit bigger than his opponent, or certainly taller. But in this case, he was slightly taller, but he was rocking against Tom Downey, who spent a long time on the GWS list, and who was a very large lump of a human being as well. And while he faded, I thought it was a pretty good first audition as primary ruckman.
Yeah, he didn't have a good end to the game. No. But that's like actually that you should you need to judge people by the whole body of work, not the last 10 minutes. So yeah, it was exciting, and he's changed his haircut, which appears not to have lost all his strength. but yeah, good solid performance. Paddy Nash was everywhere with the footy.
Sorry, this may be a first, but I think we should talk more about the ruckman. But I did. I liked his temp work.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
I thought there was some.
Okay. It didn't stand out to me, but yeah, you've given me homework. I'm excited now.
That he's ambidextrous. When he goes up, like there was one in our forward line where he tapped the ball clear of a contest, which ended up in a goal, and I thought that was a nice bit of work. So yeah, I think it was talked about in his draft preview, but yeah, that was the first time I really felt like I'd seen it in an actual VFL game.
Yeah, good. And he's not 19, so it's about time. Look, he's not. With the current trajectory of form, he's not an impossible chance not to get a game later in the year. Also, you know, the last quarter fade out was kind of one of the biggest problems with Marbs' game as well. So, it might get a bit of like for like there. And, you know, he doesn't quite have Marbs' amazing explosiveness, the four, you know, secondary efforts the Mubs does a game that look all world. But yeah, exciting game. Paddy Nash got heaps of the footy, as did Will Martin.
And Nash had some really nice moments as well.
Yeah. I thought RCD's game was the kind of thing that gets him a look in. Loves kicking a goal against the Seagulls, but yep. Also got plus 20 possessions. Looks solid. Sort of does he might come back into the team soon, depending on what kind
configuration.
Of
configuration. Well, it is Presti is close apparently, though. So yeah, that'll make it tough for the immediate moment. But yeah, the goal off a step or two from 45 metres, he's explosive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Matty Parker made his debut.
Funny enough, I've heard very mixed, just from rather one Richmond fan said to me, he's a no for me after one game, and another one said I was really impressed with his game. It's too early to make a definitive judgment, but I can tell you what, the 11 tackles, that's the kind of thing that gets you picked in the Richmond Football Club.
As a forward, that's a really good place to start.
And the niggle, which is Dimmer. I think actually, you know, we are an aggressive team. I think Dimmer could always get more aggressive and more niggly. So I think neither of those things have hurt his chances to get picked. So interesting debut, and it was lovely to see him play with Marlon.
Yeah. He had some really dynamic moments, and he won a fair bit of football, and he coughed it up now and then, which is partly his reputation. But yeah, he looked like someone who could play seniors for Richmond, I thought.
Speaking of someone who has played seniors for Richmond and looked dynamic, I thought Sydney Stack in the last quarter looked a level above.
Well, that's a good link to the Parker, because Parker playing forward, I thought, meant Stack moved back. And yeah, he looked good in doing so.
Yeah, and just I mentioned it once before, but playing tribute to Ryan Gaithwaite's quiet competence in the VFL, he had three goals again. So, Ryan Gaithwaite is good at football.
Yeah, I know.
He deserves to be on an AFL list, just, but yes, he does.
I know, and you know he's had. You know, he's come in at the end of 2016. You know, and Graham and Bolton drafted ahead of him, have ended up playing in four premierships, but between them, but yeah, he's the type of guy that when he's out of contract and you know, they have to move on. Yeah, I reckon he'll be with a heavy heart around the club.
Both him and Miller, okay, most likely they're not going to make it at Richmond, but both of them have got noticeably better in their sort of after their second years, which I think is a sign of good coaching. And, you know, there's only so far you can develop someone. The natural athleticism takes you so far, but to their credit, they've worked hard, but I think they've also been well coached. Because they're both far better players than they were even 18 months ago.
Yep. Yeah, no, I agree. We should talk about St Kilda.
Sort of like very, very Richmond 2002 vibes.
Ooh, good call.
Yeah, they're just the one off the back of one very nice finals win. And well, it's all obvious what they did with the trading, and they've just fallen apart. And actually, I'm probably being a bit hard on the 2002 vibes because I can't remember us culturally being a mess like St Kilda have, and currently the Caro dorsal fin, just a 6 meter great white shark that they managed to throw on the bus by leaking something to her and then retracting it publicly. I think the blood's in the water there, but on field. What are you worried about them? And how is Paranoid Nick getting worried about this game?
So lots of grunt in the midfield, with possibly with Ryder and Marshall in the ruck. That seems bad. Because they do, it is a, whilst not particularly dynamic, it is an extremely industrious midfield, with Brad Crouch and Jack Steele leading the way, Luke Dunstan, similar style of player,
and Seb Ross isn't a complete stiff either.
No, Max King's very much the jewel of the rebuild, and that is the concern for them. Sort of unique. Like Richmond 2002, their draft record's spotty from their rebuild period. So while, you know, if Max King is Brad Otten's, there's also, you know, we spend a first round draft pick trading for Rory Hilton, God bless him, and, you know, they've spent the sixth pick in the draft trading for Brad Hill. So yeah, I think just the rebuild has certainly taken a big step sideways. Jack Higgins has played his best two games for the club in the last 2 weeks, certainly in terms of ball winning, if not kicking for goal. So yeah, him and Butler mean that they're a very good tackle inside 50 team, so they can put our defence under a lot of pressure. But yeah, we should win.
That is well done. You've managed to imbue a sense of anxiety in me.
And Dougal Howard is very good. He's a genuinely good key defender.
Yes, that is definitely true. And yeah, like. That was a very good breakdown, and well done. As soon as I started picturing Ryder in the fourth quarter against Chol, I started to get anxious. And you know, Marshall's really badly injured in our last game, and but you know anyone who's been watching Saints games over the last few years knows that when fit, he's a very competent player. Yeah. Well, I completely agree we should win, but and we're almost full strength now. We're really only missing if Prestia and Asprey come back. We're really only missing Lynch out of our best 22. So, yeah, I'm still moderately confident.
Who did you say was missing from our best 22?
Lynch.
Yeah.
And have I forgotten something? Oh, my God. Sorry. Oh, my God. No. Yes, we are definitely missing. Well, missing two from our best 22, really, aren't I?
Yeah, clearly.
Shame on me. Shame on me. I'm
do you want to edit this out, or can you cope with the shame?
I'm not sure. I can already. I'm just hoping a friend of ours, who's very much a big fan of Nank, isn't listening to hasn't been lasted this way into the podcast, because I think I'm going to get another brick through the window. After your comment 2 years ago that Nank might be a good trade person. Yeah. Look. And God, Nank could be so good in this game, but he'll be back soon. It's still listed as medium term, where Tom Lynch is listed as short term, for what it's worth, in the injury report. But we got to get it done. If we don't win this game, we don't deserve to play finals. And football's not binary like that. We still have a chance if we lose, but you know what I mean. I'm going to watch this game in a pub, because I find the sort of it's Wednesday. We're recording this on Wednesday morning. We still don't know where the crowds can go in, and that's fine. It's not a life or death, not a basic human right to attend football, but I find the uncertainty very, and it's not Richmond's fault at all. It's discouraging to want to leave to go to the game.
Yeah, it is. Oh, I don't know. Look, I'm sure the players can insulate it, but it's a lot of uncertainty around. Yeah, MCG partly empty is super weird, but I'd still rather them there than not. A Richmond win would certainly help to make a abnormal situation feel a little bit more normal, at least for another week.
Couldn't agree more.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
It starts with a vision. If we're not locked into that, might as well pack up and go home.
You're talking about three flags by 2020.
Fitzroy's played more finals than you guys.
And after 13 straight losses, the Tigers are no longer toothless. Their first win for 2010. Carmichael Hunt. Pick up Jeffrey. He does. Carlton are on their way to Sydney.
West on to kick a goal from here. He does. What a start. Can he just slow? He's gone.
First preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won. The Tigers are into the prelim.
Go Tigers.